This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
Oh, here we go in the case against Karen Reed. First time we've talked now, Bob, since the trial has begun. And I'm just going to open it right up to you. What has been, first standout moment for you, and then we'll kind of take it back to the start and openings. But overall, thus far, what's been standing out to you?
You got to go to the openings. I thought the openings were effective for both parties. I thought you could see right away Brennan's going to try an entirely different case than Lally did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he went through his entire theory of the case in a very calm, rational way in terms of laying out the facts. He didn't have to, he had it all committed to memory. I thought he gave a strong opening, you know, and I thought that Jackson was brilliant. You know, I just did, you know, and like I'm biased. I'm a defense attorney. Yeah. Guy, so, you know, like I get, I'll get like a law hard on when I'm like watching a lawyer give like a great opening. And I thought Jackson knocked that out of the park.
Yeah.
You know, whether or not both of these guys are going to be able to deliver on everything that they promised, that's what we watched the trial for. You know, because ultimately you have to concern yourself with that. When you build expectations in opening arguments or, opening statements, the jury is going to, hold on, I got to lose that pod. The jury, when you have opening statements go down and you make promises to jurors, it is going to set an expectation with those jurors.
Sure.
And they're going to expect to hear and or see the evidence that you discussed in your opening. And, you know, I mean, Jackson made some big claims. Mm-hmm. You know, we heard of some new evidence potentially. You know, this five individuals' DNA on the shoe. Mm-hmm. We hear about that there's eyewitness testimony that saw John go into the house. I mean, who can that be other than Karen? Unless they've dug somebody up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, the phone temperature is a fascinating concept to me.
Yeah.
So, you know, those are big promises made in openings. And I think the jury's going to want to see if he's going to be able to deliver. And, you know, the same with Brennan.
Sure.
You know, and you see Brennan has tightened it up. Brennan got rid of the concept that this was intentional, that this was a rage killing. He got rid of that. He made the case smaller, which is better for the Commonwealth.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like that thing that I was always talking about. I still think that you kind of have a dilemma with the second degree murder and the manslaughter in that you're kind of talking out of both sides of your mouth, but he made it way more palatable for a jury because the second degree murder, when they were trying to sell the intention that she intended to do it, listen to all these rage filled voicemails, the whole Aruba trip, he got rid of that. Mm-hmm. You know, he got rid of it completely. So he made the case easier for the jury to digest, and he made those two charges a bit more compatible than I think that they were had they stuck to that other theory that Lally put forward.
Even though those are still the charges, second degree murder is certainly there. Do you think Brennan's even going for them at all, or is he shooting for manslaughter at the very best? And like you said, he's making it simple. He really is. They're talking about, you know, maybe the kind of sideswiped or kind of nicked or however they put it. They didn't put it as like she ran him over with vengeance. It was maybe something happened here. Is that what he's going for? And how common is that for the prosecution to not really go after what the main charges are in the case and kind of go for lesser charges because those are a hell of a lot likely more provable than the higher charges?
It's super common.
Okay.
It's very, very common. They'll typically have the lesser included in there. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely think he's going for the second degree, you know, it's under a different theory. Mm-hmm. The theory being that she was aware that she clipped him, that she left him there. That's how he gets the second degree. It's the indifference aspect of it. It's different than her intentionally plowing him down. It's that she clipped him. He's going to, you know, and I thought that, like, harkening back to the openings when Brennan used the mortally wounded clip, and then, you know, Jackson addressed it. He's like, well, that wasn't her talking about when she struck John. That was when she got to the body. So, I mean, Jackson addressed that right away.
But it's not.
Yeah.
That's the thing on that one. Like, it's like right after it. Dennis Murphy's like, so you're talking about like when you left him that night at the house. Yeah. She wasn't talking about the morning. Clearly, she was not talking about the morning.
And that's going to be a hill that Alan Jackson's going to have to climb.
Yeah.
All of these clips are going to be hills that they have to climb. They made so much work for themselves, having to try to put these things into context, having to talk them back. And I think ultimately, in my opinion, I think they're going to force Karen Reed to the stand.
Yeah. That would be very interesting. But I think we're seeing how they're getting these clips in now. And it's making a lot of sense. It's like now every single witness is being accented with a clip.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, oh shit. There's a lot out there. I mean, the defense has to know all of the clips that are out there and everything 100%. That could be pulled. So how difficult is it for them to be presenting their case when, I mean, the roads they go down then almost immediately get countered by Karen saying something stupid that undermines the point of what they're doing? Are they just kind of hoping that maybe the clips don't stick as well and as court testimony does? I'm curious. And the fact that these are all coming in the first half of this. So you're going to have some moments here where the jury, that'll be a little bit further back in their memory.
Yeah, and it's, again, Brennan's trying a much different case, right? I mean, he started, we were, 2 weeks in before Lally even started trying to prove up a case at all. I remember you and I are like, are they ever going to start trying to prove that Karen did this? Mm-hmm. Like, for 2 weeks, we were saying that. 3 weeks, maybe. Like, when is he going to start trying to prove up his case?
Yeah.
Brennan came out of the gate trying to prove it up, and he's putting the witnesses on. So as far as the defense being able to try to maneuver around these things, it doesn't change their case at all. In terms of, it leans more into the case that I've been kind of yelling from the rooftops that they should be trying, is just use the scientific evidence. Yeah. Like, what's clear is Karen Reed doesn't know a goddamn thing that happened that night. Mm-hmm. Okay. So for whatever she's saying, it's not based on an actual memory. It's her speculating because she doesn't have a clear memory of it because of her intoxication level. So, you know, if you're the defense, you just lean into that and say, like, she doesn't know. Like, they played a clip today talking about her intoxication level. She says, I wouldn't have driven on the expressway, you know, but the roads were quiet. You know, I felt like I had it. So, I mean, clearly she does not have a firm grasp of what happened that evening. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the way that you address her fervent, you know, statements like I did not hit John O'Keefe that come after the fact is that she's looked at the evidence. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, now she has the opportunity. At the time when she's running around panicked, screaming and yelling and wondering and thinking out loud, everything that all normal people would do if they just discovered somebody that they love dead on the lawn.
Yeah.
All of us would be doing that. And anybody who says that they wouldn't is full of shit.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's just not how human beings operate unless you just don't give a shit about that person at all.
Yeah.
You know, if it's somebody that you care about, that you spent, you know, a portion of your life with, you're going to be distraught.
I'd be in a psych hold too.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Dude, are you kidding me? Yeah. So, you know, like they're going to be able to address them in terms of like leaning into the science, because to me, none of what she says offsets the fact that they're going to be able to put two witnesses on that are going to say, look, this damage could not have been done by a vehicle pedestrian strike. And John O'Keefe's injuries do not in any way, shape or form appear to be indicative of him being struck by a motor vehicle. I mean, to me, that's the beginning and the end of the case. Everything else is noise. Mm-hmm. That's what it boils down to. Okay. So, you know, I mean, this could be a brilliant move by Brennan in terms of, all right, how are they going to make the, it was inside, it happened inside. How are they going to make that coincide with her statements now? Mm-hmm. And maybe that gets them to back off of it. I I don't think so.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Jackson sold a lot of it in the opening statement. So I think they're still going to stick with it. And like you said, they're not surprised by any of the clips.
No.
You know, these are all seasoned attorneys and litigators. They're going to deal with them. You know, how they're going to do it is yet to be seen. But, you know, it's just one of those cases where, you know, we're probably never going to know what actually happened that night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've always kind of been real big on the, like, Hank's got the concept that I have that he slipped and cracked his head on the concrete. I'm just taking out the part where he got hit by the vehicle when it happened.
Sure.
You know, that's what caused the injury. It's the same concept for me.
Yeah.
You know, and I get a lot of pushback. Oh, what about the scratches on the arms? I'm like, all right, dude, coyote. I don't care if you like it or not.
I
don't have to prove it.
I'm going to, yeah, I'm very much on the same page with you on that. I don't know if she struck him. Could she have? Certainly. I think that could be a possibility. And if she struck at just the right weird angle, you may not necessarily have bodily injury here or there. And if he's out of it, he's crawling on the ground. I think that explains a lot of the injuries because they still can't really prove their bite marks yet. It seems plausible to me that either he slipped and fell or she struck him or a combination of both.
See, that's reasonable doubt, dude.
I know.
What
exactly.
You just described it is reasonable.
Exactly.
Doubt.
Exactly. It is reasonable doubt. And that's my point. I've been saying it for a while. I don't think that she should be convicted on this because we just don't know. And when you don't have the facts, you can't make that sort of decision.
Right. I mean, if you've got to like lean into a situation where it could have happened that she got struck in some weird way by the vehicle, that's just not enough in this country to put somebody in prison on. It's just not like you know, I'm sad for the O'Keefe family if that is what happened.
Yeah.
You know, but I like in terms of the manslaughter charge, that's the only thing that fits that scenario. Like, I don't think that there's a world that exists that she purposefully left him there knowing that she hit him.
Yeah.
You know, like her puking things out the next day, like to me goes to the opposite of consciousness of guilt.
Yeah.
Like if she knew she hit him, she would never be saying that shit. She would be sitting there quiet as a church mouse.
Yeah.
When she's running around saying all those things, to me, it proves the exact opposite, that she knew she struck him and left him there purposely. So to me, this thing has always lived in the world of manslaughter where she went in reverse at 24 miles an hour and unwittingly struck him and left the scene without realizing that she struck him. That, like, that's the only thing that they could ever get her on.
I
think that they're going to be able to meet that burden.
And I mean, is that enough? I mean, if we took the crookedness of the cops out of all of this and it were, let's just say they're good, and obviously we didn't have a great batch here. If you got his hair on the taillight, you have pieces of the taillight there, and it shows that taillight was in fact there. That if his hair is on the damn back of the car, that really kind of shows that she hit him accidentally and it embedded in his clothes. If you go on the conspiracy route, you can go every which way with it. Let's say the cops aren't crooked in this. Is that not enough to prove? I mean, you got his DNA on the back of the freaking car.
I mean, in terms of like,
and they can prove the timeline of the taillight pieces now too.
I mean, DNA can only be a piece of the puzzle. Like we have grown accustomed as a country because of our love of all things, you know, NCS and Law and Order and all that shit. And we all think that DNA, like, it can only be a piece of the puzzle short of crimes such as, you know, aggravated sexual assault you know, semen's been left inside of a victim. That's pretty clear cut. But in terms of anything that could be construed as touch DNA, you have to be very careful with it. Yeah. I mean, John lived with her. She lived with John, rather. They use that car all the time. He touched that car all the time. Mm-hmm. You know,
It's getting harder and harder, I think, in my opinion, for a jury to go down the road of the house and the attack and all of that. And the thing is, there's a world that exists, the one I think we live in, where the house doesn't even have to be part of this. And you could still want her to be innocent or be found innocent because there's not enough evidence to do so. It seems the camps are either you believe he got him into the house and these cops beat him up and that whole thing, or you think she hit him viciously. It's like, no, I think reality is much more in the middle here.
I've said it 10 million times, yeah. And no, like you've seen like people come at me on Twitter. They clearly never listen to anything
sure.
I say.
Yeah.
Like I wouldn't touch the conspiracy shit with a 1,000-foot pole.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from maybe addressing the Proctor issue
sure.
and in injecting him with
yeah.
somehow all these pieces of this taillight ended up in that lawn.
And clearly,
but in terms of the house,
yeah,
I'm just like,
why?
It's such a harder sell, man. We've talked about it a million times.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I get for those people that believe that something did go down in that home, I get why they want, something to happen with that. But at the end of the day, the job of her attorneys is, if mm-hmm. they believe that she's factually innocent, or even if they don't, mm-hmm. is to acquit her.
Sure.
and you take the path of least resistance. That's how you most effectively do your job.
Yeah.
And to me, you just lean into reasonable doubt. You mm-hmm. use the arc of witnesses, and you leave the rest of it to the side.
Yeah.
You table it. Because ultimately, the one thing that I know is never going to happen is they're never going to be able to produce more evidence against those folks in that house.
Mm-hmm.
There's like people are like, oh, they're getting charged. Like the hell they are. I mean, like no one's produced any evidence of that. If there was actual evidence of that had been procured by the defense, we would not be here right now.
Exactly.
Because they would have gone to Brennan and they said, all right, dude, one of the dudes flipped or one of the people in the house flipped. It's done. It's over. We've been able to finally get this thing sewn up, and that hasn't happened. So we're going to be left with the same mm-hmm. set of circumstances, the same text messages, the same two experts, and maybe a couple more arguing about the house long to die in the cold.
Mm-hmm.
Google search: did that happen? Didn't it happen? Yeah. And it's like, you found that way more compelling than I did. You
sure.
found Ian Whiffen to be way more compelling than I did.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't necessarily find Richard Green to be very compelling,
mm-hmm.
but my point was I didn't find either of them to be very compelling because I didn't trust either one of them. So it's just for me as an attorney who's tried a lot of cases, they're just making their job that much more difficult. And I think that it's creating more risk for their client personally. That's just how I feel about it. When I'm being honest about it, I just think that this case is the living embodiment of reasonable doubt. Like when they drafted up the concept and wrote the words reasonable doubt, mm-hmm. it was exactly for a case like this.
Sure.
Because sometimes in life, you're just not going to know what happened.
Yeah. I completely agree. Certainly, the defense is definitely leaning into the Proctor angle of it. Oh, yeah. Right away, it was Proctor, 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 Proctor. And that makes sense, obviously, for what you're trying to do to defend your client. How strongly do you think the Proctor angle will hold up this round? Because he was the bad character in round one. He was the villain. You play Karen back half the time, she's not looking all that much less bad than Proctor this round.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be a huge part of the case, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, the bottom line is the guy was the lead investigator.
Mm-hmm.
He had his, he did have his fingers on every part of this case. He did reach a conclusion as to Karen Reed within hours of this thing happening, long before they had any real evidence of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the guy is ultimately fired and they're going to be able to bring that in. And, he is a bad egg and it's going to be an issue for Brennan to have to deal with. As bad as the Karen Reed clips are for Karen,
mm-hmm.
Proctor's 10 times worse for Brennan.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he's the dude. He's the guy.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a bad egg cop and that cop had his hands all over every piece of evidence in this case, it creates problems. They have to use them. I mean, it goes straight to the Bowden defense. It's mm-hmm. like, this was a shit investigation led by a shitty guy, a bad mm-hmm. cop, and whatever his motive was,
mm-hmm.
whatever his motive was to do the things that he did in this case. I mean, the guy apparently had been a decent cop for a long time leading up to this case, which leads you to the question why. It's almost acting as if he had a vested interest for some reason, mm-hmm. because I guarantee you, had he had a crystal ball and had he known that what he did and what he said in terms mm-hmm. of sharing information with people via text messages and, you know, all the derogatory shit, which I'm sure happens all the time. Mm-hmm. Like we can't pretend like we live in a world where you got a bunch of cops that are talking about a case that they're not talking shit about people that they like for the crime. It happens all the time, mm-hmm. you know, but like, this is one of those rare occasions, maybe the first aside from like Furman. And that wasn't even talking about OJ. That was just him talking about, you know, like being a racist, mm-hmm. you know, but this is like a rare thing that you'll never see where you're getting getting insider knowledge about like what was going on in the mind of Proctor. And it's going to be a problem for the Commonwealth. You know, there's no way that the defense isn't going to lean into it. And it would be ineffective assistance of counsel if they did, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, like how do you ignore the main investigator? Cause it went deeper than just name calling. Mm-hmm. Like when you try to think of the motive of the way that he acted, mm-hmm. like beyond even just text messages, just like the shit that he was saying, cause you can take words and you can put them in any context you want. Mm-hmm. Right. And the defense has done a masterful job of, you know, putting his words and using them as a sword and giving them much more nefarious weight than they might actually have. We don't know. Again, mm-hmm. we don't know.
Yeah.
But that's the job of the defense, to put the concept that it could be this sure. out there. They don't have to prove a goddamn thing. Mm-hmm. They don't have that burden. The state is the only one that has a burden in this case. So in terms of laying out possibilities, that's what defense attorneys do. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I'm always saying. I mean, like, we live in the world of objectivity because we have to. We have to try to think of every potential scenario that could have happened. And if it's viable, we present it to the jury. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the state that has to be myopic and has to be tunnel visioned. And they don't. They look at one thing and to the exclusion of everything else.
Sure.
Which, you know, makes them very subjective. So you have two completely different roles from each side. And it's fascinating, man. It's fascinating. This case, which is a super common occurrence mm-hmm. in this country, where somebody gets drunk, gets behind the wheel and hits somebody. You know, it happens every day yeah. all over this country. You know, for this case with this set of facts to take on kind of this life of its own is unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, but when you dig into it and you see, like, to me, it's such an incredible example of what trials are and why they fascinate people, because it's just a true study of the human condition, mm-hmm. you know, because you're digging into every aspect of these people's lives, mm-hmm. all of them, everybody that has been impacted by this case, whether it be the witnesses, whether it be the defendant, whether it be the O'Keefes, no matter who it is, like you're seeing parts of their lives that we would never be privy to, but for this thing happening. And it's like, we just can't take our eyes away from it. It's like, yeah. it's like when you're driving past a burning car on the expressway, you can't help but look at it. And that's just, it's human nature. We just, yeah. we want to know. And it's like, it's got all the elements, which every case does when you get down to it. Like, yeah. that's what I always tell people. I'm like, there is no small case. There's only small lawyers. You know, because when you get into the nitty gritty of any case, it's always like this, mm-hmm. you know, because you're always getting into these aspects of people's lives that you wouldn't otherwise see.
Sure. I know there's a lot of clips that are going to keep coming out. I'm guessing there'll be a grand finale towards the end, but they've already been pretty powerful. One of the more powerful ones, I think, that we've seen thus far, where they go back to back to back to back with different clips, is Karen talking about her drinking habits and talking about what went on that night. And we heard everything. We heard vodka tonic every 40 minutes. We heard I had four. I had six. They weren't that strong. And then I ordered an extra shot and poured it in there. The last one that they had played where it really, she goes on like a 3-4 minute explanation of how many drinks she had. I mean, that pretty much, I mean, it's like, okay, that's spoken like an alcoholic, not saying she is, but when you're going on that long of an explanation tour of how many drinks you had, there might be a problem going on there. How do you think that lands? I mean, none of it proves that she killed him, but it also shows that her credibility isn't the greatest, that she said all these different versions of how much she had that night to all these different people. Then it starts to make you wonder, well, what else is she not being accurate about, or that she just doesn't remember?
Like, to me, that's what I'm saying. I said it earlier, and yeah. I want to stand by it. The fact of the matter, it doesn't change a goddamn thing. The only thing that they could prove beyond a reasonable doubt is that she was drunk. Mm-hmm. If they should have, you know what they could definitely nail her on is a DUI.
Yes.
Like they could absolutely nail her on a DUI. So like if I'm the defense, I'm not trying to run from it because it is what it is. She was drunk. I'm leaning into the concept that like, she just doesn't know what happened that night. Mm-hmm. Like she, you know, like everything ran through her mind. Every possibility that could possibly have happened to John ran through her head, and she was puking them all out for all to hear. And again, to me, that's not indication that she's guilty. It's just not. It's like if she knew she struck him, she wouldn't say shit. Mm-hmm. Like you're not making admissions. Even later in the game, is it stupid? She said it. Yeah. Because she's created more issues for herself. But to me, it is not inculpatory. It's just not. Because like that's not what a guilty person would do, especially after the fact, when she knew that she had been charged. Like, to come out and say that shit is like, you know, I mean, it's just, it's like a stream of consciousness type thing that was going on the day of. Yeah. And it's like, after the fact, It doesn't strike me that way. Mm-hmm. And I think that the defense is going to be able to couch it in that way for the jury, to give it the weight that it deserves. And, you know, I don't think the fact that she was intoxicated, when they're going to find out that they were all shit faced, every one of them that was involved in this case, John, I think his BAC was a 0.286. Mm-hmm. That is hammered.
Yeah.
That is like, I don't know how you're upright at all. That is completely wasted.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it's like we saw the text messages today. I don't know if you saw John's like, it like whatever, 4 o'clock. He's like, I just sobered up from yesterday.
I know. Yeah.
You know, I mean, he was on one, you know, so it's like that can't be anything that the jury's going to lay their hand on.
Yeah.
And if you have people that drink in that jury, which I'm sure they do, you know, I mean, they're going to give it the weight that it deserves. And, you know, I think ultimately the biggest takeaway for me is that Karen, you know, and the problem is if Karen is going to sit there and try to say she saw John go in the house, that's your biggest issue.
Yeah.
Because you can't have it both ways. Mm-hmm. You cannot have it both ways. Either you can't just conveniently remember.
Yeah.
One thing.
Well, and that's going to be the next one, I'm sure, that's going to come up here. Maybe that is the grand finale.
If I'm Brennan, I'm saving that for dead last.
Because you got, and I'm sure it'll probably be played in closing.
You
have her, I would do it twice. I would do it at the end of their portion and then in closing. But you're going to have that, and that's going to be another real powerful one where you got every variation of the story from Karen, to I watched him go in, to I was just sitting there, to I pulled away, to I was listening to music for a while and I left for this reason. Oh no, I left for that reason. It's everything. It's and I mean, if you don't know what the hell happened, your mind is going down every tentacle of that, going, could this be what I did when I was blacked out? But she doesn't even want to admit she was blacked out. And that's, I don't know. I mean, would it have been better if she said she was blacked out? Or is this better that she's trying to argue this that she's conscious through all of this, when we have a lot of evidence that she's not? But if you admit you're blacked out, I guess that could really much more go to, well, you did hit him, you just don't remember. But again, you got to prove it. Either way, I don't know that it even matters. There's so much evidence of bad characters here and you know, just bad relationships and toxic ways of thinking and dealing with each other. But again, none of it shows someone who's out to kill somebody.
Yeah, and like I didn't even think that the texts were toxic. I thought it was like two people that were in a relationship that was on the rocks.
I read it.
Like,
I mean,
honestly,
I went through those, and when he was doing it today, and it reminded me, and I've been saying for a long time, this was a narcissistic, abusive relationship. That's my take on it, and I could see the gaslighting. I could see it all because it reminded me of some things I've been in, and I read it very much that way. It doesn't mean she murdered him. It just means that's her personality. Style, if that is what it is. There was a lot
And that's fascinating to me because what you did is you took it in and you ran it through your filter of your own life experiences, which is what makes the law fascinating.
Sure.
That's what every juror does. So when I looked at it, I'm looking at it with John being super passive aggressive. Mm-hmm. Like I thought that she was like really honest about the fact that, look, the kids are an issue in our relationship. You've said it. I know it. You know, you don't like the way that I handle the kids. You think that I spoil them. That's not your style. Mm-hmm. You know, they're an issue for us. So like, she just kept asking him like, are we getting together? He's like, well, I told you to come over. Like, so it's like beauty's in the eye of the beholder, right? It's perception is everybody's individually. And that's why it's so fascinating.
It
man.
Is.
It's like,
but at
like
the end
every
of the,
juror is going to be you and me.
Yeah.
Like looking at the exact same thing and having different takeaways. And neither one of us are wrong.
No. And none of it.
You know what I mean?
The thing is, like, whatever your take is on those text messages, none of it makes her a murderer. I mean, I just look at it and go, I can look at her and I feel like she is a narcissist to an extreme. And maybe she is, maybe she isn't.
Context for,
but again, doesn't make her a killer.
See, I don't see like, so well, give me an example. Like what did you think was specifically, if you could think of anything?
I don't have all the text in front of me. I am actually doing a piece on this in a little bit. I can
pull we'll up. Talk about it next week.
Yeah. I got a whole thing I just wrote on it.
Yeah. I'm fascinated to hear that because I read them a completely different way. And then I start thinking about, did Brennan make a mistake putting all of those in a much nicer fashion than Lally did?
Yeah.
Like that was really well done. Just text after text after text after text the whole day. What the entire conference. So, but to me, that gives the jury context of what was going on in that relationship.
Yeah.
They were bickering. They had a blowout that morning. You know, she left in a huff. You know, she's reaching out to him. Blah, blah, blah. You know, because like he's asking, oh, I hope your plumber's hot. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he's being dicky. She's being bitchy. You know, they clearly are a couple that's engaged in Tony.
Yeah.
We're being honest. If they ever saw like text between me and my wife, like, God, I don't know what people would make of us.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or like somebody that you're in the midst of breaking up. Could you imagine somebody like pouring through your shit where you're reading like everything or like, oh, you know, and then like, casting judgments on those people, like as if those heat. And the other thing that I found fascinating that I forgot was that it was Karen's time of month. And if you live with women, and I have three women that I live with, well, now there's only, well, there were four. I had three daughters and, you know, like I'd have multiple women and their cycles always seem to kind of like coincide.
Sure.
It's weird like that.
Yeah.
But, and Allison tells me, like, and I'll forget, like, you know, she won't bring it up to me. And if she's like starts crying at like a commercial, I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And she's like, oh, I'm just like super emotional because it's that time of month. And like, I think men tend to forget that, but like having that context and just because we had just had the EMT, the paramedic that was on, like that refreshed my recollection that she was menstrual at that point of the month, you know, I mean, I think that most women would agree that like there are certain hormonal changes to your personality during that time of the month. I think it's, you know, I think that's fair to say. So like when you look at all these things in context and you see what happened during the course of that day, I don't know that it helps Brennan to play these messages later where she's pissed off.
Yeah,
like I think it gives way more context to it than if he would have kind of left it alone. Mm-hmm. Like I thought he like ultimately, because I would certainly be arguing that if I were the defense, you know, that, hey, gee, I was really glad that Hank Brennan put all those text messages up, because now that gives you the context mm-hmm. of what was going on in this relationship. It was toxic, like most yeah. relationships. It wasn't perfect.
No.
I don't even know if it was toxic. They were just two people that were like...
I just think they came to their end, you know, and they clearly
were... close to it.
Yeah, they were clearly not on the same page. They were clearly aggravating each other all the time, from what I gathered from all that.
I mean, I've seen way more toxic text messages between people. Like, they weren't name-calling. It wasn't, you know, I mean, it was two people that were like actually pretty civil.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you didn't see any vulgarities and you didn't see either one of them calling each other names. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, I mean, I don't know how toxic they were. I think they were kind of like, they were childish.
Yeah.
You know, kind of the game they were playing.
Level of toxicity to like, this is horrible and someone's beating each other to, we're just, you know, we're disagreeing, but these are two personalities that just do not mesh. They're at the lower level of toxicity.
Yeah, for sure.
I would say that.
Definitely.
It's going to be very interesting to see how
this. Dude, and it just started.
I know.
But this thing's going to go every bit of 10 weeks. Like the, you know, today was not going to be the norm in terms of getting some quick foundational witnesses on there. Yeah. Like the most of it is going to be closer to what we saw with Nuttall and Kerry Roberts, where it's going to be long cross-examinations, are going to be thorough. And, you know, like Hank, for being a defense attorney, is playing a damn good prosecutor role, because they're very different roles.
Yeah.
You know, muted suit, muted tie, he's not the sharp dressed prosecutor, which is a prosecutor move. Mm-hmm. Like they are the civil servant. They're not coming in with $1,000 suits and pimped out ties. They're coming in with just a striped yellow tie. And, you know, I'm just a public servant, you know, and he's got his role of being the, you know, the caring prosecutor when he's got Peggy O'Keefe. So he's doing a good job with playing that role for a guy who's truly a defense attorney by trade.
Yeah.
You know, so he's really flip flopped. I don't know that he's ever prosecuted a case before. So it's all, I believe, brand new for him. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, and this is going to be a goddamn war, brother. This is going to be a knockdown drag out. You know, we'll see how he is on cross. I have a feeling that his defense attorney DNA is going to come out when he starts crossing the defense's witnesses. Because as far as I know, Hank Brennan is doing all of it.
Yeah.
I mean, Lally just sits there like a Muppet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that penance? Like, why do they have Adam Lally sitting there? He hasn't said a word since Brennan's been brought on.
You just sit here and shut up.
Right. Just like, I don't see him really working on anything. He just seems to kind of be sitting there. So I'm here for it, man. It's a fascinating trial. It's going to end up being like one of the trials of the decade, if not the millennium. So, you know, and I love it. I love it. You know, and a whole, like, sadly for the O'Keefe family, I fear that we're never going to know what happened to that guy. And it's a shame, because he, by all accounts, he looked to be a good man.
Yeah. I can completely agree on that.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today.